are now listening to the Build a Brain podcast with Dr. Jeannie Zayer. Join the quest to shape an efficient brain that fires on all cylinders and runs like a fine-tuned machine. You are now in the capable hands of an international presenter and a pathologically optimistic brain builder. Dr. Zayer will give you the right blocks to build that 3 pounds of cerebral muscle for you, your child, or the young adult you teach or mentor. Block by block, thought by thought, now is the time to build a better brain. Let's get started.
Welcome, friends. It is so good to be back with you with my favorite podcasting sidekick named Kibwe Cooper. And we have a new session for you. I think you're going to like it. It's on the topic of self-regulation. So you know the name of our podcast is Build a Brain. And we already covered all the cognitive functions that are like the building blocks for good thinking, good learning, good processing of the world. But how do we get those blocks built? Well, if you would happen to be a bricklayer, and if you watched a bricklayer, I bet he has or she has some amazing techniques for how to get the bricks in place. Well, that's what season two has been all about, is how do we get these thinking skills put into place so that our brain can work better than ever. So Reuven Feuerstein, who is the guru that I am following and have, I got to learn from him personally, my friends, what a rich life experience it was to meet him in person and learn from him. And Reuven just recognized that our human interactions, when they're really high quality, they elicit positive change in people. And you know that person that has spoken into your life. And you've heard Kibwe and I talk about that. And I've gotten some emails from some of you. Kibwe, they really like hearing your stories, by the way. He has his own fan base, by the way, out there in Build a Brain World. And so both Kibwe and I, even though we're many, many years apart in age, we marvel because we share a lot, you know, offline, getting ready to launch into our podcast. And we share a lot about what God's doing in our life and about the struggles that we have and what's the challenges you've had this week. And we're amazed at how often our lives have some of the very same challenges. We're different races, we're different ages, we're different backgrounds, and yet, humanly, we are so alike. Would you agree, Mr. Cooper?
That is so eloquently put, too. And it really is interesting, and it's comforting, you know, because sometimes you don't, at least for me, from my perspective, you just never know whether you're the only one experiencing something, whether not dealing with something correctly or you're not processing something. You know, I told Lauren, who is my lady, for all of you guys, if you hear me reference her, I told her that it's not that my faith lacks, it's just that sometimes I don't know what to do with the human experience I'm having. And it's really comforting to hear and to share space with you, Jeannie, because you have such a great way of being incredibly talented, but then also very, very human and accessible. And it helps me understand that, you know, this is a part of the process. You don't have to totally freak out, Kibwe. There are people who are way smarter than you, have done way better things than you, and they also have to process a little bit at a time. And so I agree 100%. And it's the beauty of humanity and the shared human experience. And I'm so glad that everybody gets to listen and enjoy it as well.
I tell people all the time about you being the co-host with me. And what makes it beautiful is that you're not trained in this program. You just hear me babble on about it, you know. And so when you reflect on it, it's so genuine what you're bouncing back to the listeners and to me. So folks, you're hearing us have an unscripted conversation. Kiboy has no idea what I'm going to say. And to tell you the truth, folks, I don't always know either. So I have some rough notes that I have that I'm kind of following along. So let's get rolling with this topic today. I am fascinated by how Reuven chose these 12 parameters of mediation, or 12 different ways that we can interact with one another. And he called this one self-regulation. Mediating someone to help them be able to self-regulate. And I know my husband, Rick, of 50 years, we sometimes have to step in and help one another regulate our emotions, because emotions can hijack your brain. And so your frontal lobes aren't working very well when you're in a hijacked moment. Hijacking happens when you're in either with an extreme emotion, usually fear, anger, maybe jealousy. Any of those could put you into this fight or flight mode. And when that happens, your frontal lobes are literally shut down by cortisol and adrenaline. It's two neurotransmitters. The cortisol makes you aware there's danger and you become alert. And then the adrenaline pumps up your muscles so that you can fight if you have to defend yourself physically, or run away if you can. They have added to that freeze. If you're in a vulnerable situation and you can't fight and you can't flee, your only other option is to freeze, maybe curl up in a ball. And so children, sometimes women, anyone who is weaker physically, maybe in a situation that all they can do is freeze. So that's a part of what's going on in the brain that, Kidboy, for you and I, we aren't being chased by lions, tigers, or bears, right? We don't have to worry about that.
Correct.
But yet we, whew, thank heavens. but we still have common modern day challenges that the neuroscientists recognize can still do this little bit of a hijack where it shuts our brain now down a little bit. Now, in a full hijack, you lose 10 to 15 IQ points.
Wow.
I don't know about you, but I don't want to lose any of those. I need every bit of IQ I've got. But that's how the cortisol and adrenaline tells your frontal lobes, don't think anymore. Don't stand around pondering if that lion is going to eat you or not. You got to run, or you got to defend yourself. So it was created for man. God did a good job of creating this fight or flight response for survival purposes. But in our modern day life, we might get a little hijack when you can't find a file on your computer and you've got a countdown. You get 2 minutes before you're going to go on the air, and I got to find that file. And you're kind of turning, you're starting to feel the stress, a little bit of a panic. Or your significant other looks at you with a really weird look and you're like, oh my word, why is she looking at me like that? And so you have a little mild, what's going on? What's going on here? So the neuroscientists have recognized that what you and I call stress, just day to day, living with the problems that life is going to throw at us, we've learned how to roll with it. And when you recognize it as adults, you and I, Kiboy, have learned how to, I say, put on my game face and act like everything's okay. Even though inside my heart is beating, I'm upset, I'm hoping, I'm hiding it because I don't want my boss to see or my friend to realize how upset I am, so I'm trying to look calm. Well, I am doing what Reuven would have said, self-regulating. I am managing my internal stress load. Managing my internal stress load. So when we are in a physical state of hunger, we're exhausted and really tired, were stressed out over, maybe overwhelmed, there's too much coming at me, or even as simple as being dehydrated, we haven't had enough water to drink, our brain is not going to function as well, and our self-regulation is going to struggle. So some of this, I thank my good friend, Vicki Snyder. She's on our MindCap team here in Indiana. And she's the one that helped me see that there's a little difference between self-regulation. It's kind of at a higher level. It's what we spend our entire life learning how to do, is how to be aware of how am I doing physically, emotionally, am I hydrated? Have I had enough sleep? Am I in a good enough state to handle this problem that I see coming at me? Am I going to be ready for it? Does that make sense? You're smiling.
It makes a lot of sense. It is also, for me, and maybe for any of the listeners as well, just thinking about all those internal questions you need to ask yourself gives me anxiety. Like, did I sleep? No. Am I hydrated enough? I don't know. Like, you know, there's so many things you're just like, oh, immediately you start to freaking out a little bit on the inside. But that does make a lot of sense. Managing internal stressors is, I think, isn't that like our lifelong goal, you know, pursuit is to figure out how to manage our everyday emotions and how we're interpreting different things. When you said we may not have lions and tigers and bears chasing us, but it could be all kinds of small things that are triggering this fight, flight, or freeze response. And I think it's interesting because for everybody, that's very, very different. You know, you mentioned not being able to find a file that you're looking for before it's time for you to record an interview, or it's time for you to go on the air, or it's time for you to give some lecture or something to the different people who you work with. And I think about that, you know, in terms of before meetings, like, am I prepared enough? Am I polished enough? Are they going to enjoy what I have to say? Is my mix going to be good enough for people? How are they going to respond to me and my own uniqueness? Like, there's all kinds of things that could trigger that fight or flight response. And I think, you know, you mentioning something just so small and granular in the grand scheme of things, I think that's sometimes the bigger threat. It's not even the big lion or the bear. We all know we're going to run for that. But how are you going to handle somebody accidentally triggering you when they said something, or your child triggering you because they're not listening on a day where you just need everybody to pay attention because you really don't have very much bandwidth? You know, like, there's a lot of very small things that I think are triggering us into that fight, flight, or freeze reaction. And I wonder, do we even realize that we're operating in that zone of survival? Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. You nailed it. When we're mediating someone else, and that's what this whole podcast is about, is either helping myself, okay, build a better brain, or for those people who are mentors, youth pastors, parents, teachers, just friends, spouses, girlfriends, boyfriends, we're all dealing with other humans in our life. How do we mediate ourselves, or how do we mediate others to self-regulate? And this starts with little toddlers, 1-year-old, 18-month-old, 2-year-old, where we help little toddlers learn what it means to just sit still and be quiet. We do an exercise at MindCap called Quiet Sitting. And a good friend of mine, a speech pathologist named Cindy, taught it to us. And we use it with almost all of our clients. And believe it or not, they love it because they are learning how to self-regulate by sitting at their table, and they just fold their hands on the table, take a deep breath and relax. And I line up 3 little pretty stones on the table. And I say, every 30 seconds, I'm going to take away one of these stones. And we're going to see if we can sit here and not move. Keep breathing nice and deep. Think of something really fun or relaxing or a pretty place you'd love to be, but no moving, no talking. Sit extremely still and quiet. Be still, in other words. So I made up a poem to go with it. And it goes with a little game I used to play when I was a kid. I just changed some of the words. So it goes like this. Quiet sitting has begun. No talking, laughing, or chewing gum. Ready, set, go. And all of us freeze. So I do this at a school with 5 and 6 year olds, and I have them in a group of four. And I've been doing it since January with them. So twice a week, they play the quiet sitting game with me. They love it. It's hilarious. And they don't get a reward when they're done. I don't say, you know, oh, here's your sticker or here's a piece of candy because you didn't move. All they get is a fist bump. That's it. And if one of them wiggled a lot or got silly, and I've only had it happen a couple times, and I've got this little six-year-old that starts... He starts laughing because, you know, he loses it. He doesn't get a fist bump. I go, oh, okay, maybe next time, okay? And I just pass him by and his face just drops because I didn't give him a fist bump. And every once in a while, they'll say, can we try it again? I go, sure, let's do it again. We're only talking a minute and a half here, 30 seconds each time, right? So it's 30 seconds, 30 seconds, and I keep pulling a stone off. I'm the only one that gets to move. I just barely move my hand to pick up the stones. And after a minute and a half, we all celebrate with a fist bump. But I talk about, look how you can self-regulate. You are in control. You can be in control of your body and your mind.
That is amazing. I think that is such a really cool skill. It's hard for adults to sit still. It's hard for me to sit still if I'm not really focused on it.
Yeah, me too. When we have clients at MindCap that tell me, I want to do 3 minutes today, in my brain I'm going, oh no, I got to sit still for 3 minutes.
You said wait.
But you know,
I don't know about it's been a long day.
So I'll smile and say, okay, let's do 3 minutes, which is like an eternity. And so what Vicky and I have talked about, and remember Vicky's on my MindCap team, she and I have talked about how this self-regulation is feeding and helping the idea of impulse control. So this is more of a cognitive skill that I'm going to have self-control. I'm going to think about how my hands aren't going to move and how I'm not going to talk. So cognitively, that can feed our ability to self-regulate. So we mediate someone for the ability to be aware of their internal stressors so that you know what is, I loved your word bandwidth. What's my bandwidth today for being able to self-regulate? And now do I have the self-control to walk in this meeting and be able to speak to my superior or to somebody that I know we have a difference of opinion. Am I ready? Can I do this? There was a man that was a manager at a big corporation that you would know, Kibwe, here in Fort Wayne. And he had a bit of a temper. And his HR department asked me if I would do our MindCap program with it. And he said, sure, you're going to help my brain work better? Okay. So we worked for about 4 or 5 weeks on his lunch break. I would drive to the factory and we would meet in the break room and he would do this program called Organization of Dots, where you work on impulse control and how to be more focused and how to have a plan. You work almost all the cognitive functions with this amazing program that Feuerstein developed called Organization of Dots. And this man told me, but maybe our sixth meeting, I said, well, how's your week? And he says, you know, really good. He said, my boss called me in and he had told me to make up this new spreadsheet. So I had that spreadsheet in my hand and I went walking in his office and I thought, okay, finally, we're going to talk about this spreadsheet. And instead, his boss said, no, I don't want to talk about the spreadsheet. I got something else I want to talk to you about. I said, what'd you do? And he said, normally I would have gone off on him. I would have been angry, but in my head, I thought, oh, well, it's just a spreadsheet. And he says, I laid the spreadsheet down and I had a really calm conversation with him. And I went, huh, so how come? What happened? What was the big change? And he points down at the dots pages. I think it's doing these, he said. He had developed frame by frame, page by page, more self-control, which fed into his ability to self-regulate, which it's like a cycle. Then the self-regulation allows you to have more impulse control. And he was really happy about that, that he didn't go off like he normally would. Now, you aren't a guy with a temper, I don't think. You're just such a chill, cool guy. But do you know people that have anger issues that you wish they could self-regulate?
Yeah, I definitely know people with anger issues, impulse control issues. I think that's really interesting. While you were speaking, one, I thought, you know, how great is it to have a reputation for having a bad temper and for the organization to find someone to help you with that rather than fire you?
Aww.
Like, that's that's a blessing. And it's so great that you can do that and essentially help save this guy's career, because there's only so much of that people are going to deal with. So if you are someone who kind of struggles with, you know, regulating your attitude, you know, I definitely would say link up with Jeannie. So when you were saying this, I was thinking about an encounter that I had with this guy at my job. He was he's a host of a show that we work on, and he has a temper. He calls it being real, you know, being, you know, he's just, I'm just open, I'm just honest, blah, 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 blah. It's like, no, you're rude, and you don't take into consideration anyone else's feelings at the time except your own. And what you're hoping is that by the time you have made yourself feel better by going off on everybody, that people will still care enough about anything that you're saying in order to help the entire process or project move forward, just kind of pick up the pieces. And so when you're saying this, I'm like, wow, this is definitely something that someone like that gentleman needs, because he has very, very low impulse control. And I wonder, I'm curious how well this works with people who have addictions and or other proclivities that are impulse related. And maybe, and you know, people think addictions are like, oh, all this crazy bad stuff. It could be, but even with smaller things like overeating or compulsively shopping or doing these different other activities that might seem benign, but you're in a triggered state while doing them. Does this kind of stuff apply all across the board, or more so with openly somewhat aggressive or volatile emotions?
Great question. Well, would you believe that I have used the MindCap program with over 300 women who have come through the court system or out of the jail system with an addiction? And they sign up for a 6-month residential program. It's faith-based. And I have been a part of that program for 10 years. So over 300 women have gone through this program. And they repeatedly tell me this is one of their favorite programs. And I think it's because of this, Kibwe. I think it's because I'm not an addictions counselor. I don't totally, though I've learned a lot in 10 years, obviously, about a brain that is prone to addictive behaviors, is that instead of me talking about their addiction or their past trauma or their childhood or why, I'm not talking about why did you become an addict. That isn't a topic of mine. Instead, I'm talking about your future and how your brain can become better. No matter who you are or where you are in life, your brain can do better. And so they love that the MindCap program instills so much more hope than what they're used to hearing in the addiction community. Because, you know, there's a lot of hope and a lot of great programs, but yet you hear things like, well, once an addict, always an addict, and, you know, I'm probably going to have to fight this the rest of my life. And so they get a lot of those messages as well. So I'm just blessed to be a message that doesn't talk about that so much. That's not my expertise. My expertise is telling you what the brain science says. And there is tremendous hope for your brain. There's a beautiful woman in my program right now, Angelica, and she's come through this program twice. She came through a couple years ago, and sure enough, you know, relapsed or whatever happened in her life. I don't know, because I don't ask. She came through the program again, and she is doing fabulous. She's just so, she has so much self-regulation now, and she is calm, and she feels good in her own skin. You know how you can tell when someone is, they're in a new place, and I'm just so excited about seeing where she's at now. And I said, Angelica, you're so different now than the first time I met you a couple years ago. And she goes, oh, I am a different person. And she says, this time this is going to work, and I'm going to succeed. And I said, I know you are. And I said, you know, I'd love to train you in this program so that you could work beside me with implementing this. And her eyes lit up and she said, I could take this training. And I said, yeah. I said, my next training is June 12th. When do you graduate from the program? She said, June 8th. She said, I'll be there. She said, I'll be there, because Angelica is fluent in Spanish. And so we'll be able, she and I will be able to maybe reach the Hispanic community in our city. So excited about what she brings, you know, what she brings to the table. So yes, you're absolutely right. This program and this idea, self-regulation, is huge in the addiction community, where people feel they can only hold on for so long. And that's where we're back to those internal stressor. You have to be aware of them, because somebody that relapses usually will relapse because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. So they got to stay in the right places and be there at the right time, or they're tired, or they're hungry, or they've allowed somebody to get to them and get them feel stressed or less than or unworthy. And so when you get that beaten down feeling, it's kind of, oh, well, what the heck? You know, I don't care anymore. And so let me shift it over to, because you mentioned like food. So we can start in the morning going, I'm on the new diet. I'm doing great. I eat everything perfect. And look at this beautiful greens lunch I'm having. And then you kind of have a rough afternoon, and you and a coworker get into it, and suddenly you're looking for all the chocolate you can find. And by 5 o'clock, you're not even close to being on your diet. You've just blown it. That happens because the brain has a place, it's called the right ventral lateral prefrontal cortex, that is in charge of helping you say no, and it can get tired. So you can have decision fatigue. So be aware, where are you physically, emotionally, when you're trying to make a big decision? And it's okay to put off a decision because you know what? I'm kind of tired right now. I really didn't eat hardly anything today. Should I be making this phone call in the physical state that I'm in? Because that is going to affect your brain. So you got to have your brain in a good state to do some of this high level work and decision making that we need to be. So that is all a part of self-regulation.
Wow. Absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think these small compulsions and the ability to regulate yourself, it's a game changer in the way that you perform and you show up every day in the world, which then, you know, cascades into you know, the results that you get out of work, out of your life, out of your relationships and connections. And so it's such a valuable skill that I haven't heard broken down the way that you did. And so thank you. Thank you very much. I learned so much.
Awesome. I'm going to close out with 5 ways that you can label or reappraise negative emotions. You ready?
I'm ready.
Number one is just label it. If fear is something that captures your brain, give it a name. Like, say, Fearful Freddy, you know, just chill, buddy. I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to make me afraid. And so that works for little times when, if it's fear or anger, you can call him Angry Annie, or, you know, give it a name. And they have discovered that that right ventrolateral prefrontal cortex I was talking about, it's underneath your temple, that it lights up when you name the emotion, and it causes your frontal lobe to get back in control and tells the amygdala to calm down. So just label it, and you might be able to calm it and move on. But if you have a bigger negative emotion, there's four more things you could do. Number one, could you reinterpret it? Is this really as bad as I think it is? And what I've learned to do is tell myself, Jeannie, 2 weeks from now, is it possible that you'll look back at this and go, okay, that was actually kind of funny what happened. You're able to laugh about it. Or you're able to look back and go, hey, I survived. We came through it. So maybe it is not as bad. It is not the end of the world. And sometimes we act like it is. Number two, can we normalize it? Can we normalize this situation that's giving me such a negative emotion? Others have been in this boat. I'm not alone. And you spoke about that, Kibwe, at the beginning of this podcast, how it feels so good to know there are other humans in this boat I'm in. I am not alone. I'm not the first person in the world to be overwhelmed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. That's really, really good.
Number three, could we reorder our priorities? We may have something, and boy, have I had to do this in my life, where I thought, no matter what, this has to be my number one priority. And for whatever reason, that was taken away from me, and I couldn't have what I thought I had to have. So that takes a little more cognitive energy to reorder your priorities and either take it off the list or move it down to three or four. And number four, the last one they say is the most difficult cognitively, in that it takes a lot of cognitive energy. And that's literally to consider another viewpoint. Can I see the world through Kibwe's eyes? Well, I'm not his age. I haven't had his life experiences. But the more I know Kibwe, I can start considering his perspective. And this is one that we have to work on with children. And we use it, we do this by teaching about empathy. Not only just feeling what somebody else feels, well, he's really sad. Do you understand why he could be sad? And yes, you could sympathize with him and also be sad. But better yet, could you move that sympathy into empathy and do something that could help? And so to do that, you got to consider another person's viewpoint. So there's four ways to reappraise a situation: reinterpret it, normalize it, reorder it, or consider another viewpoint. If you want to read a little bit more about that, that's research that was quoted by David Rock. He has a wonderful resource called Your Brain at Work. So it's understanding neuroscience for the workplace. And I really appreciated his work. He has a podcast too, if you'd like to look him up. David Rock, he has some really good stuff for the workplace. I think we've gone way over time, so I think we should wrap it up. Well, friends, it's been so good to have you here on episode number 40. Can you believe it? We've got 40 in the can, and I can't wait to have you with us again. Please share this podcast with your friends, family, teachers, pastors, parents. You know what? If you're human, you kind of qualify to listen to this podcast, Build a Brain, with my good friend, Kibwe Cooper. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Build a Brain podcast. If you're wanting to know more information on how to build a brain, please visit the website for the MindCap Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana at www.mind-cap.org. That's www.mind-cap.org. Children and adults from across the United States and Canada have found the cognitive help they needed at the MindCap Center. The specialized team is trained in all levels of the Feuerstein program and can literally help you or your child build a better brain. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.